So, Russell, let me ask you, this is Dick, let me ask you a question. Are you saying that you had some success doing silver futures and stock market, and in recent years you had a fall off in performance of the viewers?
That's sort of, I'm saying that in 84, I did a series of nine formal trials with an investor, putting tens of thousands of dollars into the market on each viewing. We did nine of those in a row correctly, up a little, up a lot, down a little, down a lot. So each of them were 1 in 4, and we were correct on all nine of them, and we made $120,000 in the market.
In more recent years, like in the last 5 to 6 years, have you had
I want to be clear. The following year, we failed because we were having to do it twice as fast, and the viewer wasn't getting feedback on the session he just did until later on, and we weren't successful. In 95, Jane and I did a formal series where we were right 11 out of 12.
How about most recently? Have you been doing some work
That was our last forecast. It required really a lot of psychic attention and energy. What we wanted to do is see, could we really do that with redundancy coding? That is to say, we had to agree on what the target was. And we had to do 18 trials. We agreed 12 times, and of the 12 times we agreed, 11 of those were correct.
I thought you were doing some work recently with Skip Atwater. Or that wasn't you?
Not I.
That was Marty Rosenblatt. And Marty comes every year to the conference and presents what they've been doing. And this is, you know, taking this as homework and presenting it at IRVA. My problem with that is, one, it's already been done, and two, it would be mainly a duplication of Marty's work, because he always presents at IRVA. By the way, for the listeners, International Remote Viewers Association, IRVA.
They have a convention, that they just have it, or is it coming up?
They have it once a year, and it's usually on Father's Day, and I think it's going to be on Father's Day weekend coming year, too. Yeah. It's in Las Vegas, because actually for travel, that winds up being one of the cheapest waste places, you know,
right,
to travel to.
And the remote viewing conference, if you like this conversation here, it's nonstop conversations like this out in the hall and over dinner and in the rooms. It's big fun meeting Lynn and everyone and just talking like this. Let me throw a question out to the other people on the panel. Is it ethical to use a remote viewer to take their sessions and use their sessions for the stock market or betting or something without telling them you're doing it?
This is what's called hijacking a session. I don't think it's ethical. I would never do it with anyone, but it has been done, and I hear it's been done successfully.
I don't think it'll be successful very long, because you're lying to your viewer. You're counting on your viewer to be omniscient in the world, and then you, in your little secret world, are trying to lie to him. I think that's a counterproductive plan.
That's right. And you know, if you're trying to predict, will the stock go up, down, or remain the same? Okay, let's say that the stock is going to go up, and you have set the goal of, if the stock is going to go up, this person will make a low score on their session, or will miss the target altogether. The person misses the target altogether, and they wind up thinking, oh, I'm dog meat, I'm pig slop, and all that. I can't remote view. When actually they have predicted the real tasking, not the tasking they were given. And I think it's unethical.
Okay, let's move on. I want to get to Mars. That's coming up next. But I'm going to take a break first. This program, Remote Viewing Special, is brought to you in part by UFOCon, and this is something really you might think about attending, especially if you're on the West Coast, but any place, really. It's always nice to take a trip to California. Are you curious about things like extraterrestrials, UFOs, alien abductions, implants? Well, even the secret space program, does it really exist? Area 51 and many other UFO topics? Well, never fear. It's here, almost. September 15th and 16th, the answers will be there all weekend long at the UFO Con in California in Santa Clara. 13 speakers, all with credentials and all with very interesting subjects. As I mentioned earlier, Douglas Dietrich will be talking about some never-before-heard information about Roswell. Same with Daryl Sims, the alien hunter. He's got some never-before-heard new evidence on implants. In addition to that, Chris O'Brien will be there talking about how you can set up your camera and get pictures of UFOs around UFO hotspots. Laura Eisenhower will tell us about her almost mission to Mars, and we'll find that pretty interesting. In addition to that, joining them are Richard Dolan, Alfred Weber, and in addition to Alfred, we have Jordan Maxwell. I don't want to leave him out, and Michael Sherratt, and also five other speakers. Plus, you'll meet some special guests like Sean David Morton, and also we will have John Wells there. Actually, I think he'll be broadcasting Saturday night from Coast to Coast AM. So if you want to go over to that website or write it down and go there when you can, it's UFOCon2012.com. In other words, it's very simple, UFOCon, all one word, 2012.com. Okay, can you remote view life on other planets? Can you sit down and look and see if there's life on Mars? Courtney, didn't you do something like that?
Well, when you talk about something like that, you're talking about something that's speculative because you don't have the ability to verify that the remote viewing data are accurate. But sometimes it's very important to do that because you want to establish the data publicly with the expectation that at some point in the future verification will be possible. And when that occurs, you want to be able to have a publication record that says X, Y, and Z. The trouble is that while you're waiting, you are the object of scorn. People look at you and say, you know, this stuff is out there. Well, remote viewing itself is out there. And I don't have any trouble having remote viewing applied to extraterrestrial issues and then waiting however long it takes. Other people do have trouble doing that. And I'd like at this point, before I go on, to ask Lynn to chime in, because Lynn has the same types of reservations, in my view, that Glenn Wheaton also has with respect to using remote viewing to study extraterrestrial life, because it brings in a woo-woo factor that can degrade the seriousness with which remote viewing itself is looked at. And so Glenn Wheaton and Lynn Buchanan, in my view, really want to focus on getting a remote viewing accepted without bringing in that extra woo-woo factor, even if the extra woo-woo factor is correct. My view is a little different. I'm looking at a longer perspective and thinking that I'd rather deal with criticism now and get the perceptions in public so that at some point in time they will have that beneficial response. There's no right answer to that, Jerry.
What did you see?
Well, we do formal scientific studies at the Farsight Institute dealing with things in the nature of physical reality, the nature of time, things like that, with all conceivable scientific controls that have ever been. I mean, we pull out all the stops with respect to the level of controls that we apply. However, sometimes we also do operational targets. And in one particular project that we did a project that was based on an anomaly that was on Mars. And that project we did only because there was an exceptionally clear, very high-resolution photograph that was NASA, JPL, Malin Space Science Systems, and Origin. And it showed what appeared to be a horizontal spray, like a geyser, but it was horizontal, coming out of what appeared to be a straight pipe that was connected to what appeared to be a pipeline leading to a dome. Now, the spray itself was unusual because I knew of no geological processes that would produce a horizontal spray. There was a shadow underneath it, so it was pretty clear it was a spray. The picture was really remarkable. And so it was that spray that led me to think that this would be a good idea for a project. And we did that project with the Mars Anomaly Project. And in that particular case, the remote viewers went in all solo, totally blind. They had no physical or verbal contact with the tasker, just an email saying, there's a target, go do it. So they went in without any contact from anybody. They did the sessions. They had not been given any off-planet or those types of targets before from me. For years, it had all been normal, verifiable, on-Earth-type targets. So it was totally unexpected, and they came back with remarkable data. And all the data are available to see on the Farsight Institute's website, and the DVD, The Farsight Experiments, actually has a section on it that in detail describes the results and puts it all together. And the remote viewers described the spray in absolutely unambiguous terms. Some described the chemical composition of the spray, the pipeline, the nozzle, and when they saw the dome, they did what these trained remote viewers do, which is they saw something and they went inside and investigated it. Now, Dick Allgaier was one of the viewers for that project, so he can talk about some of his sessions. But what I want to emphasize is that I wanted this study to be public for the record. It's got a very good image, a really good image, physical image, really good remote viewing data that match the image. So now what we're doing is we're waiting, and at some point in time we will have verification on whether these remote viewing data are accurate. But even now, you can say that they're very accurate with respect to matching what you see in the picture. But this has to be considered speculative until it's finally resolved. But on the other hand, it's really great to have that type of project done for the record so that at some point in time when some type of verification can come in, we can at least say, yes, this was done. We don't have to try to convince people that we did it but kept it secret.
Dick has emailed me one of those Mars images, and that will appear on our website when this interview shows up there in a couple of days.
Courtney.
Dick, you, what about it? What can you say about it?
Well, I did the target blind. I had no idea what it was. It was, hey, work a target for Courtney. And I did our protocol methodology, and at one point I closed my eyes and looked, and what I saw, I just sent the image. You can see what I sketched.
I'm looking at it.
I saw the thing he was looking at, but I would say one of the last people you should ask about a session is the viewer, because sometimes the viewer doesn't know.
You have a note down here that something's liquid underneath there. And under pressure?
At Hawaii Remote Viewers Guild, I mean, it looked to me, and I got a sense of liquid under pressure. That doesn't mean it's there. I could have been wrong. That's a very interesting image.
Yes, it is. We'll be posting that later.
I know a really, really, really good former military remote viewer that I was talking to about 8-9 years ago who said, oh, I just did an interesting target. And he said, it was a lake. I was standing next to a lake. I said, so what? Why was that so interesting? He said, it was on Mars. And pictures have just come out of, supposedly there's liquid water on Mars, but
yeah.
Anyway, my sketch and the target photograph is, I just emailed it out so you can publish, and I'll publish that without comment. I don't really know.
Okay, we understand
if,
that.
If I could comment about what Courtney said, Glenn and I are both very careful to try to keep the woo-woo away from the remote viewing that so many people are so quick to attach to it. However, I'm kind of torn in this because my first bilocation experience was I found myself standing on the surface of Mars, and it was about a year later that I was at a location which still had a, you know, physically at a location, and they had a picture which at the time was classified, and it was exact feedback. It was right where I'd been. I have done several things for space exploration and moon exploration. Ingo Swan predicted the what the Jupiter probe would see 17 years before the Jupiter probe actually entered the atmosphere. He was correct.
Publish Ingo's narrative in my new book, The Reality of ESP. So I have his whole narrative on the Jupiter rings and the NASA pictures of the Jupiter rings.
Yeah. About 15 years ago, I was doing a project for a space exploration, and I found the red sands and all of this. I realized in my session I was back on Mars, and yet all of a sudden I found a metallic scoop laying on the ground. And so it was this last year that I got actual picture feedback of the scoop. It is not an Earth, you know, from any of the Earth equipment, and it is an artifact on Mars, and there is a picture of it taken by JPL, and I got that actual feedback 15 years later. I was tasked by Moon Exploration Company to describe the first temporary moon base that would be used for building the first permanent, you know, to house the workers to build the first permanent moon base, and we described it. And my friend at JPL sent me a thing just recently. It was a flyover of the moon, a fairly recent one, and there was a stop, one frame, and it was enlarged, and there is that base that I described. And so, yeah, this is very possible. And yet, where is that line where it goes from the actual scientific prediction of what's out there to the woo-woo? And that is what Courtney was saying, that Glenn and I are both very careful about, because this is not woo-woo.
Yeah, we understand.
Really?
But, however, you did task the Aztec UFO crash.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And do you still stand by what you originally saw? Have you investigated that more?
Yeah, we had very top-quality viewers on that, and I still stand by it, yeah.
And for our listeners who haven't heard that interview, it's on our website at jerrypippin.com.
Yeah, Aztec being a city in New Mexico, yeah.
Yeah, and you even, I don't know how else to say it, there was somebody shot at an ET.
Oh, yeah, uh-huh.
And at least one.
Yeah.
So you had 12, I think, remote viewers. You tasked them, and
yeah,
most of them came up with similar things.
Yeah, and, you know, the ETs are just like remote viewing. I mean, you really can't, you know, it's really dumb to deny their existence anymore.
Let's. We've got about 7 minutes left on the show, so let's go around the table here and see if anybody wants to make a comment about everything. And I think I'll start with Miss Scott. She's been quiet again. You got any final comments?
I have really no final comments other than it's just been a really great experience and pleasure to be with everybody, and I appreciate being asked on.
Let me ask you, do women do remote viewing any differently than men? Do they find different things?
I don't think so. I've never come across that. I mean, I think the subconscious belonging to any person is going to see different sorts of things, and it doesn't have to do with gender. It has to do with what the subconscious goes out and looks for. So I don't think it's a gender thing at all.
Yeah, Russell, you're like me. I ask that question all the time, and evidently the consensus is that maybe this is one place where there's not much difference in the sexes. What do you think, though?
Well, I only worked with two women extensively. I worked with Hella and one of our contract monitors from the CIA, and they turned in outstanding, pristine, accurately items. The first presentation of our CIA lady in my new book, where she drew a merry-go-round divided in six segments and went on and on. I show what she drew and what she said about it. And Hella, of course, was outstanding.
And I think Lauren, before we let you off of here, you got anything? You can't plug the book yet. It's not out. You got anything else you want to talk about?
I can't plug the book, but anyone who's interested in keeping track of the book's progress is welcome to look at my website, which is laurencott.com, laurencott.com, and I'll hopefully be putting more information on that as soon as I can.
Okay, Russell, you got any parting comments? You need to mention the book and your website.
Well, my website is espresearch.com. You can tell how long ago I put that up to have that available. espresearch.com, and I'm happy to answer queries to people who write to me. And my new book is The Reality of ESP, A Physicist's Proof of Psychic Abilities. And I deliver on the proof of what it is and how to do it.
Okay. Lynn Buchanan, any parting comments?
Yeah, let me mention two things. One of our students, Dr. David Shaver, is a psychoanalyst, a very high-ranking psychoanalyst, and he is now writing a book on the writings of Jung, Freud, Paul Tillich, and other philosophers, psychologists, psychiatrists, and all that, showing the what they had found about telepathy, ESP, and all that, and showing that in the psychological field, it's been accepted for years and years. The other thing I would like to talk about is that if one of the listeners is wanting to learn remote viewing, be very careful. Like Russell said, there are some millions of pages, and many of them are charlatans. Many of them are people who have jumped onto the remote viewing bandwagon, and they are undisciplined psychics, which is not a bad thing, you know, if they have the talent. But they're going to teach you undisciplined things, and that is not remote viewing. Remote viewing is a scientific discipline. So be very careful before you put a dollar down as to who it is you're training with. And
Dick Allgaier, what about you?
First, I want to say that I think women are different. I'm going to get myself in trouble, but women are different. Thank goodness. I'm so glad they are. Some of the best, probably the three best remote viewers I know are women that I've worked with. But I just say that we understand the skill We're beginning to understand it. We've proved it. And now it's time to realize the potential. So it's time for us to do something significant with this. Let's get to work, and let's all work together. That's one good thing Courtney's been doing, is getting viewers across methodologies and schools to work in unison. And with that, I'll say aloha.
Okay, Courtney, you started off the show. You can end it.
Okay. Well, I want to thank everyone for participating. And, Russell, your comments have been valuable. There's nothing better than a good debate to get people thinking, and so that has been really great. The audience, I would like to encourage to take a look at the studies that we've been doing over the years at the Farsight Institute. There are a number of easy places to get easy access to what we've been doing. The first is the DVD, the Farsight Experiments, which summarizes and ties together all of the work that we've been doing over the last 5 years in the major in major projects, and it's a good way to get going. There's also the peer-reviewed published research that's just recently come out. I differ with Russell. I don't think anyone can competently read an article like that while you're having a radio interview. So sit down with the article and read it carefully, including the discussions of the control group issue and so on. And then I would like people to note there's also a book. I have the book Remote Viewing, The Science and Theory of Non-Physical Perception. It's the only book of its kind that deals with the science of remote viewing as it is done using these structured data collection procedures that were developed by the military or procedures that are derivative of those procedures. So we have a DVD, published research, both book and peer-reviewed articles, and we have tons of fully blown-out experiments, projects that we've done that are on the Institute's website that you can dive into. Once you get into it, you'll be amazed at how far this, what I call second, third generation scientific research has actually gone. And it's a very exciting time to be introduced to it.
Okay, I appreciate all of you being on. Our time's up, and you'd think 3 hours would cover everything, but we haven't, unfortunately. So maybe we'll do another show. You never know. Thanks very much, everybody. This has been a remote viewing special, and it's been brought to you by UFOCon, and that is being held September 15th and 16th in Santa Clara, California. And they have 13 speakers on all kinds of subjects, and I think you'll find it very interesting. Simply go over to their website, UFOCon2012.com. I'd like to thank everybody at Inception Radio and Jane Swartley, our producer, as well, for helping us put this show together. Until next time, this is Jerry Pippin. Thank you for listening. Cheers.